Good morning, everyone. And just before we start our service, we're going to begin unusually by some silence. And this is just to pause to remember the awful things that are happening in Gaza at the moment. We're going to have a little time of silence for you to think about that. And then the carols, we will start with our first carol. The choir come in on the first verse, and then we join in.
Thank you.
So good morning to everyone. You're all very welcome to the church. Welcome to those here in the pews and to those joining us on the web camera, particularly if you're worried or lonely or feeling unwell, and to anyone who happens to listen into the recording at a later date. This service, I think, is one of the highlights of our years. So enjoy the community, enjoy the chat downstairs, and most of all, enjoy singing out the carols. The readers have the order of service. They know where they're coming. So just when you're ready, your turn comes, just come forward. Don't wait for me to call you up. Also, this morning is an important day. Today's Jane Meredith's birthday. We're going to have a raffle in the afternoon after the service. And this raffle came about because Jane says, I can't move around. I've taken up knitting and I've knit a teddy. Maybe we could raffle the teddy. So this raffle came from Jane's teddy. So let's sing happy birthday to Jane.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jane. Happy birthday to you.
We begin with our opening words. This is the time of mystery and magic. Now let us enter into the Christmas story as if we were there on that very night. What part will you play this year? Are you the parent ready to protect and nurture vulnerable people? Are you the innkeeper who has no room, or will you help provide shelter? Will you sing in the song of the angels, songs of peace and goodwill to all humankind? Will you rise and follow the star of hope? Who'll be the wise ones, the generous ones, willing to give of their wealth? Who is going to be the Christmas grouch? On this silent night, let us stretch our hearts for our place in the Christmas story that never ends. May we choose well our role in this ancient story, the incarnation of love. Our chalice lighting. The Christmas message is one of hope, joy, peace, and goodwill. At Christmas time, we can allow ourselves to believe in angels, wise men and shepherds, and the entire night sky filled with the music of rejoicing. In the days ahead, may our religion be the religion of Christmas, with peace and goodwill shining in our hearts. Let our religion be a religion of joyfulness and inclusion, a religion of good deeds, not just good words. Remember, the world will change for the better if we change for the better. We light our chalice, symbol of our renewal in the spirit of Christmas.
St. Luke, chapter 2, verse 1. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria, and all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them at the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them.
Thank you.
Christmas Eve by Ken Nye. The tree is all set, packages piled at its base, nothing much left to do. Time on my hands, time to think. What is this all about? Christmas is about family, gathering together to celebrate. We do this in gathering every year of our lives and come to associate this night and the days around it with the people closest to our hearts. But always there is someone who is no longer here, who is still in our hearts but forever gone from our embraces. Through the years, we will all be together if the fates allow. But what the songwriter doesn't say is, sometimes the fates do not allow it. And that is why we turn again to the baby, to celebrate birth that suits the aching heart, that gives us reason to hope and dream, and that reminds us of the miracle of life. Because of our heartache, not despite it, birth makes this night a holy night, and which, through the adoration of a baby, we celebrate life.
loosely adapted from Corinthians chapter 1, verse 13, by Anonymous. If I decorate my house perfectly with plaid bows, strands of twinkling lights, and shiny balls, but do not show love to my family, I'm just another decorator. If I slave away in the kitchen, baking dozens of Christmas biscuits, preparing gourmet meals, and arranging a beautifully adorned table at mealtime, but do not show love to my family, I'm just another cook. If I work at the soup kitchen, carol in the nursing home, and give all that I have to charity, but do not show love to my family, it profits me nothing. If I trim the spruce with shimmering angels and crocheted snowflakes, attend a myriad of Christmas parties, and sing in the choir's cantata, but do not focus on goodness, I have missed the point. Love stops the cooking to hug the child. Love sets aside the decorating to kiss the husband. And just to be clear, try to ensure it's your own husband you're kissing and not somebody else's. Love is kind, though harried and tired. Love doesn't envy another's home that has coordinated Christmas china and table decorations. Love doesn't yell at the kids to get out of the way, but is thankful that they are there to be in the way. Love doesn't give only to those who are able to give in return, but rejoices in giving to those who can't. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Video games will break, pearl necklaces will be lost, golf clubs will rust, but giving the gift of love will endure.
Thank you.
This is a piece written by our former minister, Bill Darlison, entitled Pagans and Puritans, A Christmas Message. In the middle of the 17th century, Christmas was banned in England. In 1644, while the Civil War was in progress, the Puritan faction in Parliament drew up the first of several laws designed to outlaw the celebration of Christmas. The Puritans objected to the drinking and debauchery, noting that more mischief is committed at that time than in all the year besides. But they didn't just object to the jollity and overindulgence. The very name was considered objectionable. Christ's Mass smacked a little too much of Roman Catholicism, so they changed the name to Christ's Tide and confined the celebration to just one day, and that a day of fasting. What's more, there were real penalties for disobedience. Anyone found celebrating Christmas in the traditional manner could be fined or placed in the stocks. The Puritan opposition to Christmas has good rational foundations. Theologically, Christmas has no justification whatsoever. The Bible tells us nothing about the time of year that Jesus was born. And if we take the stories at face value, it seems unlikely that Jesus was born in December. Shepherds would not be tending their flocks on the hillside in the depths of winter. And no Roman governor would be foolish enough to call a census, such as the one mentioned in Luke's gospel, at a time when travelling would be more uncomfortable and more hazardous than at any other time of the year. Christmas is not Christian, it is pagan, said the Puritans. And they're still saying it today. And they're right. Christmas is pagan. That is, it is a festival originally celebrated by those people who lived close to the earth and its rhythms. For them, this time of year would, since the dawn of time, have been a time of rejoicing as the sun changes direction once again and the darkness, which has been threatening to overwhelm us, gradually begins to lose its grip. Why wouldn't people celebrate? And why wouldn't they celebrate in all the various ways that still linger in our Christmas celebrations, with themes of reversal, of doing things differently, which are designed to mimic and encourage the reversal of the sun in its journey round the earth? These pagan celebrations are expressions of joy, hope, and thanksgiving, which is why they are not inappropriate to the Christian celebration of the birth of Jesus, the light of the world, who comes symbolically to turn us from our descent into darkness and guide us towards the light of God. Part of me has always loved Christmas. I love the ambiguities of the season, the intoxicating mixture of sentimentality, nostalgia, generosity, overindulgence, madness, Christianity, paganism, secularism, fantasy, hope, and concern, which highlights the joys and sorrows of our humanity better than anything else in our experience. Christmas dramatically demonstrates to us both our capabilities and our shortcomings, what we strive to be and what we sadly find it impossible to become. It illustrates the messiness of our lives in ways that no sermon, no drama, no novel even can ever hope to emulate. Why wouldn't we associate the birth of Jesus with such a stark reminder of our numerous human contradictions? At Christmas, I find myself both Puritan and pagan. Rationally, I'm with the Cromwellian parliamentarians, despairing of the excess and alert to the dangers. But emotionally, I'm with Dickens, another of our Unitarian forebears, who saw this season with all its trivialities and absurdities as a spiritual necessity, a time to loosen our belts and relax our brains, a time to relearn those two great virtues, gratitude and generosity. So to the Puritan in you, I say, happy Christtide. Happy non-specific winter festival. But to the pagan, I echo Dickens. Happy Christmas, God bless us everyone.
Thank you.
We have a time of prayer. Lord God, we thank you that at the very darkest time of the year, there comes to us the brightest festival. Let the goodness and joy of its promise warm our hearts. As we make our way through the Christmas season, guide us to its quiet joys and peace. In the noisy days, let us make time for quiet. It is in quietness that we encounter the spirit of peace within ourselves and goodwill towards others. Teach us that we cannot hear the song of the angels until our hearts learn to sing them. May we remember that the most important gifts which we give cannot be wrapped and put under the Christmas tree. Kind words, patience, and goodwill are not wrapped in tinsel, but they shine brighter than gold. Show us whose needs are so great that the things we really need are ours already. At this time of the year, we believe in hope that even for a short time, we can make the world a better place. Let us believe in peace and work for peace. Peace for ourselves and all people in the world. As we reflect on hope, peace, and goodwill, those things that are the essence of the Christmas season, let us be daring in our dreams for hope, peace, and goodwill, and then put our hands and thoughts to the making of those dreams into reality. We now have a time for silence, and then we will have our next hymn.
Thank you. Christmas is subversive. One of the great things about Christmas is that it's a sturdy holiday. Christmas doesn't wimp out when times are hard. It comes anyway. Even if there are hardly any presents, even when there isn't much food to make a feast, even if you're sad, even if the world around you is at war, even if you are living in fear and danger and oppression, Christmas still comes. And when it comes, Christmas is subversive. Christmas, with its story of an unwed mother and a doubtful father, with its legend of a helpless baby born in a stable, who was worshipped by some of the wisest, richest men in the world, with its tale of the child pursued by the deadly wrath of kings who escaped as a refugee to a foreign land far from home. Christmas, with its ancient, enduring summons of peace on earth, goodwill to all people everywhere, you can't stop a day like that with a little hardship or greed or injustice. It will show up anyway, shining the light of a midnight star into the darkest places of our collective lives. Do not underestimate the power of the manger and the hope it holds. The Christmas song of the angels is not as innocent as it sounds. It has turned the world upside down before now, and it still can.
When Bridget gave me this reading to do, it reminded me of a memory I have of Christmas. And it was when my youngest brother was six, and my father bought a second-hand railway train track, and spent 6 months in the garage putting it together and building little houses and little trees and everything. And my memory of Christmas that year was coming downstairs, and it was covered in Christmas paper. And my little brother was wearing his knitted yellow little dressing gown. And he was, when the paper came off, he just stood there absolutely gobsmacked. And it's one of the best memories I have of Christmas. So I think we all probably have lots of little memories like that. Two Christmas miracles. I was visiting my mother the other day and overheard a conversation she was having with my sister. Just leave her alone. She'll do it in her own good time. You were doing everything late until that Christmas. That Christmas? I was 10 years old when my sister Joan was 1 year old in June. At 18 months, she showed no interest crawling or moving about. My parents were worried about her development. That morning, I woke and remembered, it's Christmas. I was out of bed and down the stairs in a flash. I wanted to see what Santa had brought. As I ran down the stairs, I spotted the curved rails of a railway track. It had come, a beautiful train set, all set up with the locomotive on the tracks and four wagons. It was maroon in color. My father was busy assembling an engine shed. We wound the locomotive up and put it on the tracks. Gently pulling the lever, it started running. Laddie, our dog, took fright, growled, and retreated to the kitchen, poking his head around the door as the locomotive rounded the track and headed back in his general direction. He launched at it, teeth bared, hackles standing on end. I stopped the locomotive and showed it to the dog and let him smell it, but he still gave it wide berth. That train was the miracle I had asked for. Later, my mother brought my sister down and put her sitting on the rug. Laddie came in and lay beside her on the side furthest from the train. Mum put toast and marmalade on two flat wagons, telling Dad and I, eat something. I'm now not sure how it happened, but my sister crawled over to the wagons and helped herself to toast. As I started the train again, she was giving gleeful, again, again, again. My mother came back to check we had eaten and suddenly cried out, did you move Joan to there? No, she just came over. She had crawled and moved herself. I never really noticed. My mother scooped her off the floor and hugged her. I turned on the train again. Then Dad started to arrange the different buildings to make the goods yard. My mother had opened a packet of chocolate fingers, and I took a lot of them and loaded them onto the load of the biscuits onto the wagons. They looked like a load of logs and set off on the train tracks. Round the train went, then backed into the siding. My sister was over like a shot and helped herself to one of the biscuits. One only, not two or a handful, just one. Again, again, she pointed. So I started the train on another journey, round and round the tracks. This was great. Look, look. My mother pointed at Joan. Joan had pulled herself up and was standing by the armchair, pointing at the train. Then she took her first step. I remembered that Christmas as the day our family celebrated two miracles. First, Santa brought me a train set, and then my sister walked.
Thank you. Morning, everybody. This is a piece called Bringing in the Christmas, written by Irish writer and former journalist with RTE, Catherine McMahon. This is for you, Bridget. There are women who go on misty-eyed at the mention of Christmas. I'm not one of them. I don't feel the need of it. I like the deep midwinter. I like curling inwards on dark nights. I like a bit of quiet as the year slows towards its turn. Christmas, I could do without. It's a festival of things nobody likes. There's nobody who really likes Brussels sprouts. No one can honestly say that wine is better drunk hot with orange slices and cloves. And I don't for a minute believe that anyone, in all honesty, loves turkey. Here's the thing, I know I'm not alone. We're the alley cats of the season, a secret Christmas resistance, a tribe of festive naysayers. We seek each other out, making common cause by saying the unsayable. Because, hey, what's not to like about Christmas? It's a celebration of happy families, a feast of warm houses and full larders and conviviality, a frenzy of gift buying and giving. But remember, as Jane Eyre so wisely said, the shadows are just as important as the light. If you're prone to melancholy, as I am, you can't help but see the shadows. The bright lights of Christmas pick out all the world's flaws, like dandruff at a disco. Grief, loneliness, want, all suddenly become visible to the naked eye. Christmas is open-heart surgery for the soul. The shopping streets are its operating theatre, with our most tender feelings, all that love, all that desire, exposed for everyone to see. It doesn't help that we're addicted to the notion of perfection. The perfectly chosen gift, the perfectly shaped tree, the perfectly cooked Christmas dinner, and all that expectation dangling over a gaping void of disappointment if it falls short. It was way easier when standards were lower. When I was growing up, Santa didn't bother to wrap the presents. His supply chains were unreliable. He might leave a note explaining why he'd left you the Barbie bath instead of the Barbie horse, the Wham album instead of the Who. Santa's presents often arrived without batteries, and you had to wait 24 hours for the newsagent to open before you could use your new Walkman. Some things were lost in translation, like the year I asked for a baby doll and was horrified to find, when I stripped off the baby's clothes, that it was a boy baby. My mother whisked it off to the kitchen with a look of determination on her face and came back 2 minutes later, problem miraculously solved. It's hardly surprising, from a feast to celebrate the birth of a baby to a virgin mother, that Christmas continues to demand miracles of women. In our grandmother's day, the practice of bringing in the Christmas started early in the year. A few pennies were diverted from the housekeeping money to start a store of dried fruit and nuts for the pudding. Now, bringing in the Christmas involves stocking up on selection boxes and tins of fancy biscuits and Christmas crackers and new pyjamas. And the worst of it is that you have nobody but yourself to blame, because you made all these things a tradition. And Christmas won't be the same if any of them are forgotten. Times change, but the pressure on women remains. Who are you going to this year? Oh, is it you doing it? And how many are you having? It's a miracle if there's no row over whose turn it is to host it, and who goes to who, and who can't be left alone, and who has the potential to wreck it if they're invited. And who'll wreck it if they're not invited? COVID is the ghost of Christmas past, but there's that part of you that hankers after the quiet of it. Because this year, there's no getting out of it. And before you know it, you're going to be standing in the kitchen sink on Christmas Eve, trimming those Brussels sprouts that nobody's going to eat. But it's at this precise moment that you will catch a glimpse of your reflection in the window and see your life from the outside in, like a Christmas card, all warm, twinkly lights and happy Christmas faces. And that's when the person on the radio will play the one piece of Christmas music you actually like, a piece so beautiful even you will have tears in your eyes listening to it. With a bit of luck, this blessed wave of goodwill and gratitude might carry you through Christmas Day. It will certainly last while the kids open their Santa presents, and the smell of a freshly peeled mandarin orange pulled from the bottom of a Christmas stocking takes you back to your own childhood. You might even manage to stay on the Christmas surfboard through the table setting and the gravy making and the eating of the turkey, which even you have to admit is actually delicious. But by the time the plates have been cleared and the Brussels sprouts are wrapped in cling film and stored in the fridge, you will be well and truly over it. The wave breaks, leaving behind a kitchen full of washing up. There's no room in the green bin for all the wrapping paper. Only the plain biscuits are left in the tin. But don't despair, because the best bit is still to come. The bit when you crawl into bed on Christmas night and count the sleeps until next Christmas.
We're now going to have our offertory. And while the offertory is taking place, we're going to have some beautiful traditional music from Aina and Kira. And just to say that Aina and Kira have two children with them today. So this is Tomas's first visit to the church. Tomas was born in September. And the offertory today is for the Capuchin Centre on Smithfield. It's not for the church. Every penny to the Capuchin Centre. And beautifully timed as well. Our notices. First of all, a big thank you to everyone who's been part of this service. You know, this doesn't happen. I throw things out and hope that everything will be all right in the night. And boy, do people put in work to make it so. Thank you to the choir, particularly to people who've come along today, Gráinne and David to the choir, Kira and Aina for providing the music, but also for all the choir members who came Sunday after Sunday and practiced, and those who lead the choir played the flute and that music so beautifully, and to everyone for singing wonderfully. It was absolutely lovely. And there's also a team of really hard workers putting in wonderful work downstairs, making tea, coffee, there's cake, soup, crusty bread, there's jams and chutneys and things like that for sale down there. There is a raffle, please buy a ticket. And there's a raffle down there, and just come and join us. And for regular members here, do make sure visitors feel welcome with us. There will be a service next Sunday on Christmas Eve, the 24th of December, and it's going to be led by Rory Delaney, without the E in his name. And sorry about that, Rory, about misspelling. And there is a service on Christmas Day as well, and the usual service of reflection at lunchtime. And also, the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church have a new magazine out. It's a quarterly magazine. This is its first copy. It's called Inspiration. There's about 20 copies outside. Well worth picking up. It is brand new and well worthwhile. So now we're going to have our final hymn this morning, Joy to the World. Our blessing. We create Christmas. Christmas will be what we make it. It will be a time of peace. If we are peaceful and peacemakers, it will be a time of joy. If we find joy in our hearts, it will be a time of goodwill. If we show goodwill to those around us. Amen.